It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we'll talk about holiday cookies on this week's edition of Food Friday. First, a lot of young adults are thinking about their own mortality these days. According to a report in the Wall Street Journal, the pandemic has a lot of younger people feeling uneasy about their future well-being, and as a result, more and more of them are writing their wills. Meanwhile, Caring.com says in 2019, 18% of 18 to 34-year-olds had a will. In 2021, that went up to 27%. And last year, the legal documents company LegalZoom said about a third of those under 35 who wrote a will said they did so because of COVID-19. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you gotten your will or other estate-related planning in order during the pandemic because you were nervous or just because you had more time on your hands? For people younger, under 40, say, what was it like to write that will? What led you to go ahead with it? What questions do you have about wills, trusts, probate, or other related matters? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jennifer Hannon is a member of the Estate Planning, Estate and Trust Administration Practice Group of Godfrey & Kahn. She also serves on the firm's management committee and is their managing partner. She focuses on estate planning, probate, and trust administration and other areas. Jen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we have these reports of Wall Street Journal and some online platforms. Is this something you're seeing in your office lately, maybe younger people than you used to, asking about wills?
I would say yes, although I think a lot of the younger people are turning to the internet for some of their advice and drafting with respect to wills. That said, we have been incredibly busy the last 2 years, and some of that, of course, relates to people facing their own mortality, as well as, you know, the possible anticipated changes to tax laws in the coming year.
I'm guessing even before the pandemic, you would encourage people, maybe more people than have thought about it, to think about making a will or making other arrangements. Is that a good guess?
Absolutely.
What are some of the problems that can happen if people that people might not think about if they don't tackle these issues?
Well, the most prominent is that property ends up going to a place or a person you would not want it to otherwise go to. Wisconsin does have, like many states, all states, have laws regarding what happens to your property on death if you have no will. We call that intestacy. And if you die intestate without a will, the state says where your property goes. And that may be to typically your parents, if you have no children, if you have children to your children, if you have a spouse to a spouse. It just depends on the makeup of your family situation and the laws in that state. But many people don't have a nuclear family like they used to, and a lot of those laws are somewhat antiquated in terms of the line of descent.
I want to talk about some different situations and then how complicated we'd want to get into for a will. I'm thinking maybe of those people, millennials came up in the conversation with children, younger children. What kind of things do they definitely want to resolve if they're making a will?
Definitely determine who you want to have the physical custody of your children and be their guardian. That is the most important thing. And in most states, that designation can only be done in a will.
Now, what happens then without that designation should a parent pass on?
Then the court determines who will have the physical custody of your children. And it may not be the person you would have wanted to have them.
How complicated is it to do this? Is it enough just to, for that situation? Like, I want a will to make sure my kids go to this person or this person. Can we just do that with an online form? Do we need to sit down with lawyers? How complicated is this?
It doesn't have to be complicated. It can, though, become more complicated based on your personal situation. If your sole purpose in drafting a will is to just make sure you're designating people for your guardians and you don't have a complicated financial picture, then perhaps using an online resource would be very simple for you in the short term. If your assets are becoming more sophisticated, if you own a business, if you have any kind of strife in your family, perhaps then you should meet with a professional to figure out how best to address those issues.
Talking to Jennifer Hannon with Godfrey & Kahn, estate planning expert there. We're talking about wills and other elements of estate planning. Some reporting out there is showing a rising interest in that for younger age groups, millennials, and even younger. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you've made new arrangements in the last couple of years, or you have questions about what kind of things you should be thinking about, the number is 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jennifer, you mentioned family strife. And I imagine a lot of people want to avoid leaving behind difficult situations over money and other issues after they pass on. What kind of things can we do to make our survivors get along more harmoniously or as best we can?
I don't know if you can do anything to make them get along more harmoniously, but you certainly can take some of the guesswork about what you wanted to have happen and have the legal documents in place to make sure that what your wishes are followed. And some of that is, certainly that's built in the will. The other thing you also want to make sure of, and that this is in light of COVID, is making sure that if you're incapacitated for a period of time, you have the right people making decisions for you. So healthcare powers of attorney, financial powers of attorney. When you don't have a clear plan in place, even if you have no difficult family relationships to contend with, those stressful situations may bring out something that wasn't there before or was under the surface, and individuals could start fighting over who's in charge. So if you clearly have documents in place that state who is in charge, you can kind of take all of that out, and the stress of the family and the stress of the situation can dissipate.
I've been asking about wills so far. I know sometimes people think about trusts. I assume that's in more complicated financial situations. First of all, what is a trust as opposed to a will?
A trust is just a contract between the person who creates it and the person they're designating to be their trustee, which states what they want to have happen with their property, both during lifetime and at death. The primary purpose for a trust, when we're talking in the context of wills and estate planning, is to avoid probate. Probate is the court-supervised process of administering a will. And many people these days want to avoid that for privacy concerns and or, you know, to avoid additional costs associated with the estate administration process.
We're talking about estate planning, wills, trust, probate, and more with Jennifer Hannon. She's a member of the Estate Planning, Estate and Trust Administration Practice Group of the law firm Godfrey & Kahn in Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guest about how all this stuff works, who needs to be thinking about it, what kind of issues we should focus on, maybe your experiences. If you've made the decision to make your first will ever over the last couple of years or take the time to revise it, what are some issues you've run into? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Have you had a bad experience, maybe in probate, if someone didn't leave well-detailed instructions? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about estate planning and wills. The Wall Street Journal had a story last week about how more and more millennials are writing their wills, in part out of concern about COVID-19. Jennifer Hannon is with us, member of the Estate Planning, Estate and Trust Administration Practice Group of Godfrey & Kahn. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about wills, trusts, planning, and more. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can share an experience that you or maybe your family have had. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jennifer, when it comes to probate, what kind of things do they look at if there's not a will or a trust in place, or do they just go with state law and it doesn't matter at that point?
Correct. If there's no will or trust agreement in place, the probate court will administer the deceased's estate pursuant to the laws of intestacy, which has that backup or default line of descent for your heirs. So again, if that's not something you'd want, perhaps you should have a will in place. The other thing I should point out is not everything goes through probate, which I'm sure many of the listeners understand here, but just in case those don't, things like life insurance and retirement accounts have beneficiary designations on them. And those assets don't go through your will, they go via your beneficiary designation that you have on file with your financial institution. So regardless of what your will says, if your beneficiary designation say something different, the beneficiary designation will trump the will.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Gail is with us in Madison. Gail, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Gail?
Yeah, my question is, I can't get my father to write a will. He's turned over like medical power of attorney, financial power of attorney to me. The house is in my name and my sister and my brother's name. I would have access to his bank accounts. You know, he lets me know the account numbers and how much is in the accounts. But should he still have a will?
Gail, thanks for the question. Jennifer, I'm assuming you'd encourage her dad, yes, indeed, to have a will.
I would, only because I don't know exactly how the items that you're talking about are titled. If you told me that all of your dad's assets were titled jointly with you or with you and your sister or other siblings, then perhaps there would never be a probate to worry about, and therefore a will wouldn't become operative. But if he's just sharing information with you upon his death, you will not be an authorized account user. So it would be something that would have to go through the probate system. Now, if you're his only heir, or whoever, maybe you and your sister are his only heirs, and he's not married and he doesn't have any other children and he wants all of his assets to go to you, then the laws in Wisconsin governing intestacy would get it there. But again, it just makes it a little bit more organized if you have those documents in place, and just frankly, a little easier for you as the heir to manage the process if you have those documents in place.
Gail, thanks for the call and good luck to your family. Brianna joins us now in Janesville. Brianna, hi.
Hi there. I was just wondering if she could tell me when is it appropriate to have a living will versus a standard will, and if there are any circumstances in which a living will is the better option.
A living will, Jennifer.
This is a common misconception. A living will can mean different things to different people. Oh. Some people refer to a living will meaning a trust, a living trust. A trust is that document we talked about earlier that can help you avoid probate. A living will actually is a healthcare document which states your specific wishes regarding healthcare in an end-of-life stage care situation. So assuming we're talking about trusts, so living trusts, there is no threshold in terms of when a trust would be desirable. Most of the time, it's governed by how private an individual wants to be with respect to their finances. Anything that goes through probate is subject to court review, and anything that's filed with the court can be received and viewed by anyone who wants to. And so when you go through the probate process, you have to, for instance, list all of the heirs, list all of the assets of the estate, list the values of all of those assets and who's going to receive all of those assets. Many people don't like that regardless of how large or small their estate is. So they would prefer to not have to go through that process and keep everything out of the public eye.
Thanks for the call, Brianna. And how about making that other meaning of living will, the one that's more commonly assumed, I think, about medical directives, end-of-life potential directives?
Yeah, so in Wisconsin, there are two documents for healthcare instructions. One is a healthcare power of attorney, in which you designate an individual to make healthcare decisions for you if you're unable to do so yourself. And the other is a living will, sometimes called a declaration to physicians, in which you state specific wishes regarding three items. One, do you want life-sustaining procedures used if you're in a persistent vegetative state? Yes or no. Do you want feeding tubes used if you have a terminal illness? Yes or no. Or do you want feeding tubes used if you have a persistent vegetative state? Yes or no. So that's what a living will is here in Wisconsin. Very, very short and sweet, but it gets across those very specific wishes you may have regarding end-of-life care.
Thanks again for that call. We'll go to Linda next in La Crosse. Linda, hi.
Hi. My question is, if you have revocable trust, how difficult is it to switch over to an irrevocable trust? How much is involved?
Linda, thanks for the call. Jen, can you start with what does it mean to be revocable versus irrevocable?
So revocable means you can revoke and amend it during your lifetime, change it as many times as you wish, the terms of it. An irrevocable trust means you can't revoke it or amend it. The short answer is you cannot convert a revocable trust to an irrevocable trust. That conversion just doesn't occur. Instead, you'd have to take assets out of a revocable trust and create a new trust that was irrevocable and gift them to that trust. That's pretty advanced estate and tax planning that some people do partake in, but usually those are for individuals who are concerned about a taxable estate, which is greater than $11.7 million.
Thanks a lot for the call. Hope that helps. Jen, in our last couple minutes, a lot of families will be getting together online or maybe in person for the holidays. And I've heard people encourage us to talk to family members about these issues. Not the most pleasant conversation always, but can you make the case that, yeah, get together as a family and figure out what you want to do?
So I can go either way on this. I think what's most important is people make a decision to do something and communicate it to their family. In working with families for the last 20 plus years, I think it is very difficult to convince a parent to do anything, especially the older they get. So while it's great if you have that kind of a relationship with your family to have these types of conversations, I think if you're trying to convince them to do something, convince them that it will make your lives a little easier. It may save everybody a little money on the back end. And it's important to have these conversations so that whatever their wishes are, they are complied with, versus children, of course, flailing and just trying to figure it out based on random conversations over the course of decades.
Jen, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Jennifer Hannon is a member of the Estate Planning, Estate and Trust Administration Practice Group of Godfrey & Kahn, the firm's managing partner. Talked to her about estate planning and how to get our wills, trusts, and other legal affairs in order, as reports are out there that more millennials especially are getting more interested during the pandemic in making those kinds of arrangements. The nearly 7,000 Afghan refugees living at Fort McCoy were introduced to an American holiday tradition last week. The Madison Ballet did four short performances of The Nutcracker for the families. WPR's Courtney Everett was there to capture the excitement.
Dozens of Afghan parents and children sit inside a warehouse. Their eyes are drawn to the sugar plum fairy gliding across the stage in front of them. Some are even capturing the beauty with their cell phones. The performance was Jonathan Solari's idea. He's the CEO of the Madison Ballet. The idea came together in just 1 month. The joy around him reminded him of his time helping refugees in Greece in 2015 and 2016.
I had seen the families who were in this transitional space and how much joy engagement with simple arts and crafts brought them.
Solari called a friend with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs in Maryland and shared his idea. Then a collaboration was formed.
There's Department of Homeland Security, the Department of State, the Department of Defense, the Army, the Fort McCoy workers. It's been exceptional.
30-year-old Mushkan Karimi is one of the refugees amazed by the live performance.
What I seen here, it was more than what I accepted. That was really amazing.
Unfortunately, she watched the performance without her family.
No one is here with me. I'm alone. My family is in Afghanistan. It's been stressful since I came here.
Karimi has been at Fort McCoy for 3 months. Her cell phone broke while she was trying to navigate the chaos at the Kabul airport. It took her a while to hear whether her parents were okay.
Sometimes I'm thinking about it. I wish I never come.
The performance is a welcomed break for Karimi from her stressful situation. Some children living at the base never had seen dance before and even got to try it before the afternoon performance.
Okay, now we're going to try something different. We're going to go.
That's Madison Ballet instructor Juan Carlos de las Velas. He's teaching the children different ballet techniques, including twists and leaps. A few of Atikula Amadze's children beamed while they danced. He lives on the base with his wife and 7 children.
Every morning when we wake up, we appreciate that and we thank God that we are here safe and secure with our families. And there's not enough words that I can say that how grateful we are for that.
He and his family boarded a plane at the Kabul airport with about 380 other refugees. Now, he hopes to find work.
All I will try to find a job and send my kids to school. And obviously, I have to go to work to put food for my family on the table and whatever they need, I'll do for them.
His story, like so many other refugees, holds onto hope. Sisters Ariana and Layla Zafari understand what it means to leave Afghanistan in hopes of a better future. Ariane is a board member with the Madison Ballet and explains their father's family fled Afghanistan decades ago.
My dad had to walk on foot for weeks to get from Afghanistan to Pakistan.
12-year-old Layla is an angel in the Nutcracker and hopes that the performance is an inspiration to refugee families.
I'm happy that I get to perform for them, and it's like a sign to tell them to don't stop following your dreams.
Although the performance had to end, it was a short escape into dreamland for the families as they pursue new lives here. Courtney Everett, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up after the news, we'll talk to a Wisconsin professional baker about her favorite holiday cookie recipes and advice, and you could share your favorite cookies. In fact, you can do it right now. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tell us about your favorites. If you've already made them this year, share some pictures, or better yet, mail those cookies to Rob Ferret, care of Wisconsin Public Wait, what's that? Oh, I can't actually ask people to do that. Huh. Okay. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. It's Food Friday with Christmas just a few weeks away. It's time to talk about holiday baking. Few weeks, just a week away. We reached out to a Wisconsin baker to share her favorite holiday cookie recipes. We're talking now about baking during the holidays, especially in the cookie realm. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your favorite holiday cookies to make? To eat? Do you have memories of holiday cookies you ate as a kid? Do you make the same ones now as a grown-up? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Punky Egan is a certified master baker. She's the former lead instructor for baking and pastry arts at Madison College. Punky, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me. You've just kind of interrupted my cookie baking today, but that's okay.
All right. What have you been baking so far today?
Oh, well, I have some pecan fingers that I baked and some shortbread cookies, and I can go over those recipes with you. And I do like the little cookie press, the little spritz cookies. So if you looked in my freezer right now, you wouldn't find much food, but boy, you'd find racks of cookies.
And that's something you sent over, those recipes. We're going to take a look at them. A lot of these Christmas cookie recipes can be frozen in advance. How well does that work?
Oh, it's terrific. I mean, I start my Christmas baking right after Thanksgiving. The doughs easily keep for a couple of months in the freezer. And even when I make them and bake them, they will still last a good 6 weeks in the freezer. So you can space your cookie baking out so that you don't feel rushed at the last minute. And you always have fresh cookies then to take right out of the freezer.
I'm trying to picture in your freezer, are there containers with like a big glob of cookie dough, or are they like in individual cookies ready to throw on the rack?
Well, I have some of each, and I have half sheet pans in my freezer, and I just stack them up. So I sometimes I have to even look. I'm not sure what I have and what I've baked. So I do try to keep a little record of it because I can get overboard.
Do you ever find last year's frozen dough in the freezer?
Luckily, no, I haven't. But I do like to make some tiny little tartlets, and I make that dough year round. So every once in a while, I do find a little of that tart dough left over, but it's still good.
Excellent. Well, you are making some of your favorites today, and you shared some of those recipes. We have them up at WPR.org/Food Friday for anybody who's looking for a recipe, maybe for this weekend. That's WPR.org/Food Friday. Let's start with those shortbread cookies you mentioned. It's a classic. Tell us what goes into your shortbread.
Well, I'd like to keep it very simple and plain, and then just accentuate it with a different flavor. So it's a butter, sugar, some vanilla, eggs, and flour. And then from that, I can make three to four different kinds of cookies. So for instance, I make a little pinch cookie, and then I put a little bit of, you can make whatever you want, jam or pie filling, lemon curd, and you can put that in the middle and you pinch the two, you cut them out into squares and you pinch the two diagonal sides together, and you can see the filling coming, and it's a cute little cookie. And then also I just make some plain, I put lemon oil in, and then I can make a nice little scalloped cookie, and I love that. And then of course chocolate. This is a really dense chocolate cookie, and it has a little bit of espresso powder in. Ooh. So it just has a really nice complex chocolate flavor.
Now, I know sometimes with baking, we got to be a little fussy about, you know, the temperature of our butter or how much we mix. Any little tips that are going to make sure the shortbread comes out right? Or is it friendly enough that even Rob can pull it off?
Oh, my gosh. That's why I chose these recipes. They're very simple. They're pretty foolproof. I mean, you're just creaming the sugar, and it doesn't matter if you cream it a minute or 3 minutes. You're just trying to incorporate it all together. So it's a pretty fail-proof recipe.
Talking to Punky Egan, certified master baker, former lead instructor for baking and pastry arts at Madison College. It's Food Friday. We're talking about baking holiday cookies. Very timely conversation. If you've got some Christmas cookies in the oven right now, love to hear from you. If you need some advice or you just want to share a favorite, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Ben is with us in Atoma. Ben, hi.
Hi. We just wanted to share some of our favorite cookies ever are oatmeal, like a good chewy oatmeal cookie with that like dark brown sugar or molasses flavor. And we're actually working on our own recipe. And I was wondering, we're using browned butter in it. And I know a lot of cookies use like room temperature butter, but our cookies are spreading a lot when we bake them. So I was wondering if you could help us work out how we can get them to be a little firmer and less spready.
Oh, interesting. Any advice to keep those cookies, those oatmeal cookies, from spreading out, Punky?
Well, have you tried them first with just regular butter, Ben? Because then you can determine if it's the brown butter that's the issue.
Oh, all right.
But if you don't want to do that, sometimes you might have too much baking soda or baking powder. The leavening can cause a lot of spread. Or if your oven is too cold, a lot of times people set their oven to say 350, and they have no idea if that oven really is that accurate. So I always recommend an oven thermometer, because you do want to get these cookies to be baked at a higher temperature, because that will control the spread too. The hotter the temperature, the less spread.
Excellent. Ben, three ideas for you and your home kitchen lab to test out there. Love to hear how it turns out and if one of those is what solves it for you. Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. I want to check out, Punky, one of the other cookies you've already mentioned. You're baking today. We've got your recipe at WPR.org/Food Friday, the pecan fingers.
Oh, these are one of my favorites. This recipe I have is probably 30 years old. And they're so classic, and yet they're so delicious. You wouldn't think just such a few amount of ingredients would make such a nummy cookie. And if you don't like pecans or you don't have pecans, you can use finely chopped walnuts. Would make a really nice cookie also. And this is a great one for the kids, because they're rolling it out and it gives them something to do. It doesn't matter what the size is. I always say finger size, but if somebody wants to make them a little bit bigger, or so it's just kind of fun to work with. And then I do not put the powdered sugar on them before I freeze them. I always wait until I thaw them out, because what will happen, the powdered sugar will be absorbed by the cookie when they're in the freezer. So you have to finish them last when you take them out of the freezer.
Again, you can find that recipe at WPR.org/Food Friday. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Sue is with us by Delavan. Sue, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Sue?
Well, I make the spritz cookies every year, and sometimes they come out cleanly from the cookie press, and sometimes they're a gooey mess. And I'm just wondering if it's the recipe I add cream cheese into my dough, but sometimes it works well, sometimes it doesn't.
Okay, Sue, is it right away when you start making the cookies that they get, or do they get softer as you get further along with your cookies? Because the dough could maybe get too soft on you.
Right. I know it says to refrigerate the dough, but I've made them when I don't refrigerate it, and they work fine. And sometimes, I don't know, is it a temperature thing, or is it the...
So you're having an issue getting them out of the press?
Out of the press, yeah. And onto the cookie sheet cleanly.
Oh, okay, and your cookie sheet, you have it greased, or you have like a sill pat, or what do you have for them?
A nonstick baking sheet.
Okay. I had a little problem, in fact, with mine this year, and I only make them at Christmas time, so I forget. So I have to make some notes to myself. But I found that when I fill my cookie press, I really have to press it in tight. And you want to do that because if there are any little air pockets at all, you're not going to get that clean cookie out. So you want to take your time to just really kind of smash it in your cookie press if you can.
Excellent. Hope that helps. Sue, thanks for calling at 800-642-1234. We have Punky's Cream Cheese Spritz recipe along with those others at WPR.org/Food Friday. It is Food Friday. We're talking to Master Baker Punky Egan about holiday cookies, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have advice to share or advice you need from our guest? Do you have things cooking today, or do you have plans to bake over the weekend? What is your favorite kind of Christmas cookie, holiday-themed cookie? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the Food Friday conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday talk with certified master baker Punky Egan about some great holiday cookie recipes. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What kind of holiday cookies do you have to have on the table this time of year? Which ones do you love to bake? Which ones do you have to have but hate to bake because they're a pain? Call it at 800-642-1234 with your favorites, your advice, or your questions for our guest. That's 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page, and you can find recipes from Punky at WPR.org/Food Friday. All right, Punky, you gave us simple recipes, mentioned getting kids involved. I want to go to the opposite extreme. Because I saw a recipe on your website, actually. Years back, we said to our kids, hey, each of you pick a thing you want to bake, and we'll help you bake it. One of my daughters picked macarons because she watched baking shows, right, on the TV. And one of the most notoriously difficult cookies to make, they came out tasting okay. They weren't, I guess, the right texture for macarons. Any advice if somebody wants to try this this advanced cookie skill?
Oh, well, if you have patience and you have a lot of almond flour, I say go for it. You know, it's the most fun you can have in spending not a lot of money. The main thing is you want to make sure you whip your egg whites and sugar correctly. That's, I think, the hardest part. Some people tend to over whip and some people tend to not whip it enough. It has to be kind of just stiff peaks, but not beyond that. And then when you fold that egg white mixture into your flour, which is almond flour and some more sugar, powdered sugar, you want to just fold that very gently. It has to be all incorporated, but it also still has to be slightly runny. And that's kind of the key too. If it's too stiff, you'll have peaks and it will crack. And if it's too runny and soft, you'll have pancakes. So it's kind of one of these just right And it's they're fun because you can flavor the fillings so many different and color the macarons. I mean, just it's a fun cookie to make. Like I said, if you have patience and are a little detail oriented, put it that way.
And it sounds like maybe some practice might make perfect, so we get a feel for how much to whip the egg whites
absolutely.
And sugar.
Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm.
All right, I love it. Let's get into your recipes now. You're using weights in grams in a lot of cases instead of what people might see, and especially by volume. Why do you do it that way?
Well, you know, I did because I know so many people pull recipes off the internet now, and really international recipes and all the standardized recipes are starting to go to grams. They've kind of bypassed even our pounds and ounces. And really a cup with a volume weight measure is so inaccurate because a cup of flour, it will weigh around 4 ounces, but sometimes you might end up packing it so tight that you might have 4.5 ounces in. So measurement, the weight is always will give you the most correct measurement, but pounds and ounces, I think that's harder for people to use than grams. I think grams are very friendly. And we don't have to know the translation from, you know, pounds and ounces to grams. We just need to know to set our scale. So that's why I love grams.
And I've heard from a lot of bakers, do it by weight, not by volume. How big an investment is a little kitchen scale in grams?
Oh
it's
goodness,
not going to set us back that much,
no.
Right?
No, $20 and $30. No, it's a great, and they're battery operated. They're small. You can store them easily. No, it's a wise investment.
We are talking about
plus the holidays. Put that on your list.
Get that on the last minute baking or a gift list for the bakers. We know. I love it.
That's right.
It is Food Friday. We're talking about baking holiday cookies. We have Punky Egan with us, Wisconsin's own certified master baker, former lead instructor for baking and pastry arts at Madison College. Still time for your calls or comments. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you need some baking advice, you can share your cookie traditions this time of year. Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We heard from Lucia on Facebook. Lucia says, my favorite cookies to make are chocolate chip. I've taken the vanilla away and replaced it with maple syrup. In so doing, I've decreased the brown sugar and white sugar from 3/4 cup to 1/2 cup each. So what my grandkids ask for at Christmas and birthdays. It really warms my heart. Box went out today. We'll get to the Monday for them to enjoy. Wow, I tend, Bunky, to go with your basic straight up on the Toll House bag recipe when I make chocolate chip cookies. This sounds like an interesting substitution.
Well, you know what's so fun about it? She only makes it for Christmas and birthdays. So it makes it so special. And I think that's why I love the holiday baking so much, because I only drag out these recipes for this time of the year. So I so look forward to tasting them. And then after the holidays, I think, okay, put those recipes away and I'll take them out next year.
Now, what
so
I love
that's
about
a good idea.
What I love about this is maple syrup instead of the vanilla. The price of vanilla went through the roof a couple years back. I don't think it's settled down yet. That sounds like a nice a bargain flavoring to me.
Well, and yes, it's going to be a liquid sugar. So I would think that the cookies would be a little softer, but I think the flavor would be terrific.
All right. And oh, we heard from Pat and Allenton who just asked if you could say again what a cup of flour should weigh.
Well, it depends if it's all-purpose or cake flour or bread flour. So you have anywhere between approximately 4 ounces, 4.25 ounces to almost 5 ounces. That's why it's such a hard measurement to say, because when you say flour, we can get 3 different varieties here in the States. So I'm thinking that's, again, the scale is a much better weight, an accurate rate than a volume cup. Do you know that some of the cups that you have, they are not a true cup even.
Really?
So that's the other problem that, yes. So if somebody has a cup measure and they consistently have bad results, it could be that cup measurement is off.
Great. Something else to worry about. Okay.
I know. So get a scale and it'll solve your problems.
Now, I wanted to ask about sugar cookies. These are my favorite as a kid, the sugar cookies with frosting.
Yes.
And it's amazing yes. how much variety, I think for people using pretty similar recipes, how much variety there is in how they turn out. What is your key to a good sugar cookie?
Well, I like to use, obviously, butter for mine. And I do use a European-style butter. And that has a little bit more butter fat. So if you look at the serving size on the back of the package, if it says 12 grams per serving, that's a European-style butter, which means it has more butter fat and less liquid. So, and that makes, for my cookies, it makes a little crisper cookie. And that's what I really like. And the butter flavor is just so delicious.
What's that butter going to say if I'm at the store looking for that? How will I tell it?
Well, this is what sometimes they don't say anything. Or they'll say gourmet. They'll say European. They'll say premium. But you can always tell by flipping it over and looking at the grams per serving. Most butter, it will be 11 grams per serving. So when you get one that says 12 grams, that means it's this European style, no matter what the label says.
Let's go back to our callers now. Barbara is with us in Milwaukee. Barbara, hi.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Barbara?
When I was a little kid in Waukesha, there was Katie's mother would make a chocolate cookie and cover it with powdered sugar. It was like a disc, and it was sort of cracked on the top. Does that make sense? And do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, and oh, go ahead.
That's a chocolate crinkle, mm-hmm. and it's called crinkle cookie. So if you want to look that up, that's what it's called, chocolate crinkle cookie. If you get a good Betty Crocker cookbook, it'll be in there.
Ah, that's funny. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
You're
thanks.
Welcome.
Thanks, Barbara. And Punky, is that going to be the one in my head? It's one that's got a little bit of a crunch on the outside, but is more squishy on the inside. Is that how those should come out?
Yes, yes. Yeah, right. And it's you roll it in a ball, and it's rolled in powdered sugar before you bake it. And then as it settles out while it's baking, it cracks on the top but stays soft inside.
All right. I hope that answers your question there, Barbara. Punky, you mentioned the classics you like to make, your favorites again and again. Do you have any, you know, experimental models that you like to try out or give a shot come the holidays?
Well, you know, every once in a while, I did a couple of years ago get a Pizzelle press, and that's like a really flat waffle press, and I kind of like those. It's interesting because you can make a chocolate batter for, and you can make just a vanilla, and I like them because they're fast. Now this is, you'd have to supervise kids because it is a hot press, but those cookies will bake out in 20 seconds, so you can make a lot of cookies in a short amount of time.
Now, you've baked a lot of cookies in your life. How many, I don't know, dozen do you end up making around holiday season? Do you mass produce, or are you just making them for, you know, a small circle here?
Well, you know, I always think I should kind of cut it down, but then I think, well, I don't know. I have a lot of neighbors and friends that I want to give them to, family. So I end up probably, I don't know, maybe 20 dozen.
That's a goodly amount.
That's probably not very many.
And we mentioned freezing the dough. Now, my grandma used to make cookies around Christmas. She'd freeze some, and then when I'd come home and visit in the summer, she'd surprise me with some Christmas cookies. Any favorite cookies that last well in the freezer?
Now, is this already baked, Robert?
Oh, they're already baked,
dough?
Yeah.
It's already baked. Well, a cookie with a lot of fat in it. So any of these cookies, actually, because there's a lot of butter in these. Because that will tend to keep it from drying out so much.
Okay. Oh, that sounds great. I was a lot of times it was the sugar cookies, and those were pretty
right.
buttery.
And a sugar cookie tends to have a lot of butter. Yes. So.
All right. Well, Punky, thanks so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun. I'll let you get back to your baking.
Well, Robin, hopefully you'll be baking this holiday yourself.
We're gonna try whoopie pies, I think, this year.
Oh,
for holidays. Never made them before.
I love those.
Oh,
yes.
Me too.
Those are fun.
Punky Egan is a certified master baker. She's the former lead instructor for baking and pastry arts at Madison College. She joined us for a look at baking holiday cookies. You can check out a few of the recipes she shared with us. We've got them at wpr.org/foodfriday. What we got? The pecan fingers, the shortbread. Oh, and the cream cheese spritz cookies. So head over there, find the recipe you might make this weekend. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show, have you heard a good book lately? Join the conversation about great audiobooks and where to get them and share your favorites. That's coming up Monday morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. And you can keep sharing your favorite holiday cookie recipes, by the way, over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Heard from a few of you over there. Love to see some pictures of what you've baked so far this year. Again, head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tweet us at Central Time WPR, or you can email ideas@WPR.org. Show us your fanciest holiday cookie creations while you're there. Yesterday on the show, we talked about the past, present, and future of postcards with author Lydia Pine. A lot of you called in with your postcard stories and memories. We heard from some more of you on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Ashley says, I always send postcards when I travel, especially during international travel. When I've been to Mexico or other parts of Central America, the fun is to not only acquire the postcards, but to actually locate the post office to get stamps, because it usually requires talking to locals, asking questions about where it's at, and adventuring to a new area of that town that I wouldn't have gone to otherwise. Carol says, I send them, and I love to get them. And Mary says, I'm sending two each week with jokes written on them to boost the spirits of my favorite ICU nurse, my daughter. You can keep sharing your postcard stories over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This is Central Time.